everybody. This is Dominic D'Angelo of scscoops.com, adfreeshows.com, several other outlets, but I am here. It is episode 7. I can't believe it's episode 7 already. It is Straight Talk with the Boss, Magnum TA and Greg Gagne. Hey, guys. How you doing this week?
Good. How about you, TA?
I'm just living the dream.
That's it. Sunshine and lollipops.
You're working two jobs. Plus the podcast.
Plus the podcast.
He's amazing. Yeah. Thank God you're younger than me. What are you, 10 years younger?
Oh, I think I'm about 25, 30 years younger than you.
you could be.
Well, Greg, you don't look a day over 40. I'll just say that.
Hey, I'm 75.
Wow, that's crazy. I may never would have guessed it, Greg.
Oh, yeah. What would you guess, 80?
No.
Well, I'll tell you, here's what happened today. We got on this, and I'm sitting here waiting for you guys, right? And I'm going, God damn it. It was a quarter to three at my time. I said, 15 minutes, plenty early. And I'm looking, trying to get some good color here. And I said, Laura, why don't you put a little stuff on me? So she starts touching me.
Oh, you got
up.
Some foundation on it?
Yeah. And then she brings me this stuff and puts it all over. It's called Orgasm.
What?
Yeah, honest to God.
Oh, my God.
So if I start breathing hard.
Jeez, I think we might have a sponsorship coming up or something soon enough.
There we go.
Holy smokes. Well, I think what I'll do this week is, here's a quick intro. We're going to cover Raw, a little bit of Raw this week, cover Dynamite. I'm intrigued to get both your thoughts on that. Somebody I wanted to talk about too was Bron Breakker moving forward. And Steve Austin actually hit the news reel this week too. So what I first wanted to start off with though was the big takeaway from WWE Raw on Monday. Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins made the pitch, a compelling pitch, that he wanted to be Cody Rhodes' shield moving forward when it comes to The Rock and Roman Reigns. Greg, did you happen to catch this segment at all?
I certainly did. I thought it was one of the better interviews I've seen in a long, long time. And I would have to say, Seth, that's the greatest interview I think he's ever put out. It was phenomenal.
Right.
It was emotion. It was heartfelt. It got everybody involved. And it was just uplifting. I really felt good after the interview.
I agree with you. And I honestly think, too, that was Seth's best interview I've ever seen.
Ever.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Yeah. You know? Magnum, what do you think?
Well, I think it's so real for everybody because Seth, was influenced so much by Dusty, when he was at the Performance Center and had, the dream touch kind of laid on his career early on. And, I know that it's, he says it's everybody's story, and it truly is. It's not just Cody's story. It's for the people. It's their story. It's what they want to see. It's the, the potential, as he said, you are probably the last one that's truthfully got a chance at stopping this reign, of Roman Reigns, coincidentally. And, it's very, poetic. It checks all the boxes. And I think they've got such a emotional buy-in with the fan base that it's just going to continue building momentum, got the people so vested in them. And, it's just elevating everybody that touches it. And it's going to do, it's just going to do amazing things for the titles and making people, paying more attention and wanting to see, what's going around, because that title is virtually been dead in terms of what it's been able to contribute. It's just been a placard and a day counter. And how many days can, group, in moratorium, you could say we've had it. And it was funny because I saw the memes, over the last 6 months or so showing, Roman it, with a big gray beard and right. Hair, doing whatever it takes to break the streak. But, I think the progressive people, the people at Netflix and everybody's really excited to see this next chapter in the storytelling that WWE is capable of producing. It's going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
You hit it right on the head. There's storytelling. It's so lost in some of the other organizations. And I got to I got a feeling that, you know, with Triple H probably having much more control than he had in the past, you know, he feels that he knows the emotion and the feeling that you need to have in the ring and how you have to deliver those interviews. And it was a heartfelt interview from Zeth and everybody that night. I mean, that's one of the best Raws I've seen in a long time. I mean, everything was right on, spot on, got the people so involved, and it felt real.
You know? Is there something in specific, Greg, that stood out to you too with Raw, aside from Seth and Cody?
I mean, everything hit me right. I mean, the matches were great, the storytelling in the ring, the interviews that they produced, you know, and the thing with Rock and Reigns, and oh my God, they're going to be tough to beat by anybody. You know, they always have been, but I think with Triple H having more control of it, we're going to get a little more of that emotional storytelling that we haven't had in the past.
Yeah, I agree.
That makes any sense.
That makes plenty of sense. And to your point, I really was, I tuned in Tuesday morning and was catching up on it. And the opening match, it was Gunther, the Imperium.
Oh, my God.
Versus Jey Uso, Kofi Kingston, and Xavier Woods. And what great storytelling that was.
Oh, that Gunther. Jesus Christ. He laid in a couple chops. I saw, was it Jey Uso or Jimmy?
I think it was Kofi was really getting a good brunt of it.
Oh, shit. They all got nailed, but yeah. He went down. It was a thump.
But
that was old school right there.
100%.
Yeah, and it was really, really great for me.
Yeah, I agree. Magnum, is there something that really stood out to you else on Raw that was a really big
post? Well, I like the way they're simultaneously setting the stage for the next pay-per-view. I mean, they're, you know, everything's very methodical. You know, they're narrowing the field. They're getting the big guns ready to vie for that position, you know, to come out on top of that game. And so they're not just, you know, sitting back on what they've already created. They're really, you know, they need, you know, Seth needs to be in the middle of a whirlwind of folks, you know, chasing him too, because mm-hmm. it only elevates everybody's game with everybody touching this thing. So, I think that they've got some good spins. I was reading something on the internet. Somebody said, yeah, and Cody will win. And then they'll run in and they'll cash in the money in the bank and he'll lose it in 15 seconds. I said, no, he should beat him too, but just put a period on that. I'm here, I'm over, and deal with me. That's what I would do. Yeah, go ahead. Come cash in your chips after I've slayed the flipping lion. You know, and let me take your head and put it up on the wall too.
What a great twist that would be too, because I mean, yeah. You think about it, I think it was WrestleMania 31 when Roman Reigns kept the title, or Brock, I think it was Brock kept the title, and then Seth Rollins cashed in and so what a swerve that would be if Damian Priest comes out, tries to do the same, and Cody thwarts his whole efforts in doing it. That would be
I mean, you know, they're at a point where, you know, they've got the biggest opportunity I see them having to have somebody made coming out of this thing to do, you know, whatever angles and exciting things they want to do over the next year. Obviously, you know, you build to that big match, but you got 12 months of business afterwards. And it's always exciting, you know, to see the baby face in the chase. But, you know, the baby faces have been in the chase for years. So, you know, they can create some excitement. And, you know, I'm not a big proponent of having a baby face and a long-term, you know, role that becomes boring too, mm-hmm. because, you want to see the controversy, but, you know, with the elements of, you know, at some point CM Punk's going to come back. At some point, you know, we're going to see, you know, Cody and the whole thing replayed mm-hmm. with Seth, because I mean, that's just a ongoing saga between those two. And you know, Cody's beat him, you know, time and time again. But if he's able to weather that storm and come out still, you know, the world champion after all those guys coming down his throat, that'd be a huge money match.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Absolutely. I think too, what was kind of neat about that whole Seth segment too is, and you kind of touched upon it, I believe, Magnum, is that the moment where like he's kind of talking about like all the stakes that come with all this, you know, this and who it is, and I think his delivery and him like kind of establishing himself as such a good promo in that, not only established that. And then you think about what's coming forward with Elimination Chamber, but it's really helping kind of build that title back up, that World Heavyweight title back up, to be something that's a prized possession too. So,
yeah, 100%.
Yeah, they're delivering pretty well on this. When it comes to television production, in the presentation of it all, I talked about this on my other show, Rumor and Innuendo, and I wanted to get your guys' thoughts. Greg, I'll start with you on this one too. What do you think of commentary on Raw, like Pat McAfee?
Pat does a great job.
Yeah,
he adds so much credibility to it. He delivered. He knows when to stop talking. He knows how to get it in there, and he's phenomenal. I mean, I think he's one of the best out there. You know, to help elevate. I don't want to say elevate wrestling. Wrestling is at the top of its game, and it has been for a long time. You know, you look at the numbers that they produce, the ratings they get, and, you know, they're the NFL.
Right.
And wrestling, you know, for years and years, you know, everybody says, well, it's the WWE and it's them. But if you go back in history, the ratings that the Crockett's had, the Gagne's had, the AWA, the NWA, Eddie Graham in Florida, Fritz Von Erich in Texas, I mean, the ratings were unbelievable. I mean, I can tell you on our syndicated program, and we were, you know, from St. Louis to Winnipeg to the West Coast. Mm-hmm. And we had, there was only one TV show that beat our ratings, and that was 60 Minutes.
Yeah.
We had a 24 rating in Minneapolis with a 64 share.
Jeez. Can you imagine getting those numbers today?
60 Minutes had a 24 rating with a 65 share. So it's just 65% compared to 64. But then from us to San Francisco, all the way up to San Francisco and, you know, Denver, Salt Lake City, all of them, we're all up in the 20s for ratings. You know?
Wild.
And that's unheard of. Mm-hmm. And I know the Crockett's, TA, you're more familiar with that than I am, but you had phenomenal ratings there.
Well, you know, we did, and back to your point about the commentating, you know, there's so many elements of this that make it, and if you don't have the play-by-play, the color, going back to the Gordon Solies and Jim Ross and you know, the greats that have called it, if they're not painting the same picture that you're trying to sell with what you're doing in the ring and the work that's going on there, which takes a referee being in the right spot at the right time too. It takes this orchestrated dance of all these people contributing to make this overall product, you know, sold and received the way, you know, we intend. And you sit down, they can lay out the greatest angles since sliced bread and have the two greatest, you know, workers in the business in the ring doing it. But if the two people that are watching it, they're sitting there calling it, talking about it, if they're talking about everything else and they're trying to get themselves over, or if they've, or they're just not that good at their craft or whatever, you're going to miss 30-40% of the capability of what that angle would bring, because it's not being sold by those people watching. And, you know, there's, you know, Greg and I both have, you know, worked with some of the greats doing that. And it is just as masterful of a craft in its own way that the work is in the ring. They all go in concert together.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you think about a good commentary team, and you know, you have that voice of reason, the moral compass of everybody is like usually the lead guy that's telling, you know, what it is, and how Gordon Solie was somebody to do to that effect. And then, but you think about like the Bobby Heenans or the Jesse Venturas that kind of add that little flavor to it all and stuff like that. And I think Pat, has added like that new level almost to it too when it comes to the raw product. And mm-hmm. like not only being an actual professional athlete that it has experience outside of the wrestling realm, but then he's also has a sense of humor and a, you know, a good following and stuff like that. There's a lot that added texture that goes with it too. And also obviously being a pro wrestling fan too. So it all balances out very well, I think.
Right. I mean, you have to have the whole thing, the referee, from the ring to setting up to the referee, to the announcers, the wrestlers, they all have to produce. We had great announcers too. We had Marty O'Neill and Gene Okerlund.
Yeah.
And Roger Kent. And Roger had that deep voice. He was better as an introduction guy. Marty O'Neill was great interviewing. And that's where Gene Okerlund had watched Marty got real sick. And on a Friday, we do our interviews on Monday. And Gene Okerlund, he was a salesman.
Oh.
He sold time at Channel 11 in Minneapolis. And he did a lot of radio in the past. And Al DeRusha, one of our guys who worked with us, he said, well, let's try Gene Okerlund. So he took him up on the weekend to his cabin. They watched Marty O'Neill tapes all day. And Gene came back on Monday. Boom, just like that, he had it.
You know, and look at that, too. Look at the legacy.
We'd do taping interviews. We'd start about 9 in the morning and finish about 6 at night for all the markets.
Wow.
And he was right on it. Never missed a beat.
How about that?
Eventually ended up with the WWE. But like TA said, you have to have that whole package together to make it work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Raw is kind of very much showing that. I think the only aspect that can be counterproductive is the 3-hour time block that they all have to worry about. But overall, it's still a very intriguing product, and I think they execute it very well at it. So,
I mean, to me, WWE does it better than anybody right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Without a doubt. I'm sure that's even saying that. I mean, everybody knows that.
Yeah. We'll talk about the other product here in just a second. But first, I did want to cover follow up with and you guys, I'm not concerned if you guys watched it or not, but NXT, Bron Breakker won the NXT tag team titles along with Baron Corbin. I just kind of wanted to get your guys' thoughts on Bron Breakker as a star moving forward. And when it comes to WWE, obviously he showed up in the Royal Rumble, reportedly took over Brock Lesnar's position there that was supposed to be there. And it really was a highlight of the match, I think. Magnum, what do you overall think of Bron Breakker?
I think he's got it. He's got all the right stuff. I mean, he's got a presence. He's got personality, got charisma. You know, he's certainly, you know, very credible. He's so explosive as an athlete in the ring. I mean, he's got, you know, all the physicality that his dad brought, you know, and he's got a little bit his interview. If they continue to cultivate him and give him more stick time and keep guiding him, the sky's really the limit, because really people are getting vested in that personality. You put him in the right scenario. It's great. They got him with Corbin, you know, right now. I think that's a great fit, you know, with the seniority of, you know, Corbin's experience. Just look at Corbin's history and what he did,
general manager,
all the mic time, mic work, everything he did. Again, another guy that was a very credible athlete and very credible in the ring and helping now bring, you know, Braun into his own. So, you know, he's a megastar in the making. He can stay injury free. He's got a long, good career in front of him.
100%. Greg, what do you think of Braun, and what similarities that really stand out to you about him? His like in comparison to his dad and his uncle.
Yeah, well, you know, we trained his dad.
Yeah,
and I like him a lot. But and TA hit it right on the button. He's just putting Corbin with him was a fantastic idea. You know, now you put an experienced guy in the ring with him. So he's going to learn when to do something, when not to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to help him on the mic too. Corbin was great on the interviews. And he's that close with his interviews of being, to me, really, really good. It's just there's a few things about him or the way he presented his interview just threw me off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've watched him the last couple of weeks, and he's improving like that. And he's going to be a megastar. You know, if he keeps his head on straight, listens, he It'll be fantastic.
You know, I wouldn't be against a WrestleMania match between him and Gunther for the Intercontinental title.
I'd like to see Wahoo with Gunther.
Oh, my gosh.
The two chatmasters.
I'm going to be excited to cover Wahoo a lot when we do a spotlight on him. I think.
Oh, yeah. He was – what a character.
Oh, yep. Man. And me being a Jets fan, and I have that extra tie. So I'm
tougher pretty... than nails.
Yeah, you could have a four-way dance with Wahoo and Ronnie Garvin and Johnny Valentine and let the four of them just beat each other into a puddle.
Jeez. You ain't lying.
That'd be a great four-way match.
Just, yes.
You can only win by the chop.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, man.
A lot of blood from the chest on that night.
Holy smokes. You could have your own Ultra figure line of those just bloody chop chest versions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got it right there.
There you go.
We'll get them all on board. We got Wahoo coming up.
Yep. Yes. That's exciting. I'm excited for that. Oh, man. All right. Something else that people can be excited for is the possibility of maybe Steve Austin coming back at some point in the pro wrestling ring. He had an interview with ESPN and he was asked about returning to the ring. And he gave the conventional WWE answer, never say never. And especially in this world of pro wrestling. And obviously he showed up at WrestleMania 38 and had a real highlight of a match with Kevin Owens. Greg, have you had experience with Steve cross paths with Steve Austin?
Have I had experience with him?
Yeah.
Yeah. I helped train him.
Oh, well, geez. I didn't know.
Yeah, I was down at WCW.
Okay.
Or with Turner Bryan. Yeah, with WCW. Mm-hmm. And I was training with, here's who I had it, Diamond Dallas Page, Steve Austin, Booker T, Kevin Nash.
Whoa.
Brian Pillman and one other one.
Dustin?
There were six of them. And they were all. Dustin? And I was, and it was with Eric Bischoff. Mm-hmm. And I was working with him for about 2 or 3 weeks. And finally, I said, Steve, come here. I said, all you guys get out of the ring. We're going to have an hour match. And we wrestled for an hour.
What?
I wanted to teach the guys how to get the pace and how to sell and how to react to everything. They weren't quite getting it. And after we had that match, everybody kind of, Triple H was in there with us.
Oh, okay. Nice.
But Triple H, he was only there for about maybe 2 weeks with me and then was gone.
Yeah.
But I came back to Bischoff after we had this deal and I was giving, they wanted the report on everybody. I said, these are the next guys. These are all your top guys. Within a week, he fired almost all of them. Kept Diamond Dallas Page because he wanted him to be the champion. And I said, well, he's green. I mean, he was a manager. He's not ready. These other guys, Booker T is ready. Steve Austin, Brian Pillman. I mean, you don't let these guys go. Kevin Nash, all gone.
Man.
I didn't know what I was doing, I guess.
Well, yeah. Okay.
No, but Steve was phenomenal. And he caught on like that and he listened. And what was really, I mean, he'd been wrestling for a while, but what he was missing was the little things that my dad used to teach all of us. Mm-hmm. When to do it, when not to do it. It's all about the timing and getting that feeling, when to do it and that storytelling in the ring. And that's what they were all lacking. But they all caught on pretty good.
Oh, yeah. And I think Steve got a lot of his start in Memphis. I know he worked earlier in Memphis, I believe, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
They needed polishing. They just, they were all had the potential. But they needed that little extra little thing.
The little detail that really made it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Megan, because, what has been your experience with Steve?
Well, I actually hired Steve, but when he was his then manager, Lady Blossom, was reached out to me when I was working with Dusty in the talent relations role, and was sending tapes and whatnot. And she's the one that actually, kept pushing the buttons to get him in the door, and I signed him, brought him in and signed him, and I saw the tapes and I saw all the raw potential. I mean, he just you know, great, great looking athlete. And, you know, so many great athletes came out of that area in Texas. Anyway, he reminded me of all of them because I'd been out there with the Von Erichs. And so I knew he had the right thing. And it was shortly thereafter that I ended up leaving the company. And I watched him from afar, you know, watched his journey and the way they used him and what they did with him at WCW. I mean, they gave him some opportunities, but, you know, certainly, you know, he didn't morph into, he had a journey to go on. I mean, he had to go through the whole ECW deal and that experience where he really, you know, really just let it all hang out and showed, you know, all that personality he had. And of course they didn't find it at first in WWE either. Cause they, you know, my gosh, what was it, the ringmaster?
Yeah, the ringmaster, $1 million man.
Yeah. You know, you know, the aptitude, and the grit and the desire. So when you're at the right place at the right time, you know, you can capitalize on that once in a million opportunity that comes along. And, you know, he certainly, you know, grabbed that brass ring and yanked it off the wall and, you know, set standards that nobody's yet to surpass in the industry, as far as I know. From what Jim Ross tells me, you know, I don't think any one person has made more money in one physical year just from wrestling than he made during his peak. And that's phenomenal.
I believe it.
Mm-hmm. More than Hogan?
Yeah, more than anybody.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's biggest single year from wrestling.
Because he's really is a good guy too, and he's a hard worker. Hey, T.A., let me ask you something. And you and I have talked about it, but people don't know. Who trained you?
Who trained me?
Mm-hmm.
Hundreds of people trained me. I worked out in the ring one time for 2 hours, uh-huh. and then worked 7 days a week after from then on out.
That's unbelievable.
That's crazy.
It really is. It was. The career you had and how quick you caught on is remarkable. And that's why I wanted to tell that because, you know, I don't think I can picture another wrestler that's made it such a great career at such a short time with what little you had as background training.
Well, sometime we'll have to get Princess Victoria on as a guest because she was privy to that 2 hours of training I had. And it was her and I and Buzz Sawyer in the ring together. And I mean, I'd never hit a rope. I'd never done a tie up. I'd never grabbed a headlock. I didn't know a tickle from a tackle from, you know, a wristwatch. And, you know, we literally, you know, she said, and we were in, they taped in a bowling alley back then and had in Portland and they kept the ring set up. So Buzz and I and Victoria went down to the ring and about 2 solid hours. And she said she remembers to this day me kneeling down, you know, and taking a break for a minute. And the steam was just coming off my body. We were working so hard. And then that night, the next night, I worked a live TV match against Buzz, who I'd been in the ring with. But he told everyone that I had been working in Mid-South.
What?
And so like I was, you know, I was experienced and nobody ever knew the better. And I got, I mean, my very first week in the business, I had like a really good payday and I was booked 7 days a week. I worked there for 6 months. I never smartened Don Owens up until like forever. I mean, I saw him at the NWA convention in Vegas. Uh-huh. And I think we laughed about it at the bar, you know, and of course that was way long after the fact. And, you know, I had evolved into this character, but I mean, he bought into me, saw me work on TV, you know, first match ever. And they let me go. And I mean, they had me on interviews and, you know, green, you know, the lights came on and off I went. And it was just, talk about, you know, flying by the seat of your pants and on the job training.
Well, you had background as an amateur wrestler, though, didn't you?
I did, and I'd worked security in nightclubs for several years while I was in college, and so I mean, I had that, but that,
yeah. Well, so you had that your belly, really, yeah. And all that.
I mean, I knew how to take care of myself, but I didn't know how to present, you know, what this world of professional wrestling was all about, and I mean, my second week in the business, they put me with Gene Kaninsky in Seattle, Washington, and Big Gene's, you know, former NWA champion, everything else. And he drops me behind him and tells me to roll him up, and I belly to back suplex him on his head because I didn't know what a roll up was.
Oh my! And I bet he's like, "What the hell was that?"
Yeah, and he was great. I mean, he loved it. He laughed about it. He was a big old raw bone tough guy.
Yeah, he was.
But just, you know, a lot of good people that wanted to, you know, see somebody young and hungry make it. I mean, Moose Morawski gave me my first pair of boots. I'd borrowed a pair of boots to wrestle the first time, and he gave me this big set of size 13s that he wore, old pair that he had. I had to stuff something in the end of them, but it tripped him like little Abner. And, I mean, it was a real Chinese fire drill there for that first 6 months. But I learned a lot.
By fire.
How many years did you have then before you had the accident?
6 months. 6 months in Portland, 6 months for Joe Blanchard, then a year and a half in Portland, I mean, in Florida, championship wrestling. And that's when then I got my break. So I'd been 2.5 years in the business, got my break, and then wrestled until October 14th, 1986, when I had the career-ending automobile wreck. So I had just under 7 years of actual ring time that all that stuff happened in.
Wow. Yeah. That's wild to think.
That's a phenomenal story.
Yeah, how about that, too? Just learning on the go, basically, and one of the hardest, like most secret kept genres like that you could be a part of.
I don't know anybody else in wrestling that did that.
Yeah, that's crazy, man.
I mean,
they may have done it, but they didn't last very long.
Yeah, right.
But I mean, we would go 6 hours a day, 6 days a week for almost 4 months.
Wow.
Before Vern let us go.
Yeah, yeah. So such a different kind of aspect of it all.
So I mean, what he accomplished is just, it blows me away.
That blows me away. Awesome, Bangham. What a heck of a story too.
It really is.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so I wanted him to tell that so everybody can hear. Yeah,
absolutely. I appreciate that. I want to get your opinion on some of the stories that was told on Wednesday night, both of you guys. AEW Dynamite took place. There was the opening match between Moxley and Dax Harwood. We had a Tony Storm segment, Young Bucks wrestling in suits against Top Flight, the main event of Orange Cassidy versus Matt Taven in a Texas Death Match. Greg, you watched it. You have notes
right here, boy. I took notes.
Holy smokes! All right.
I don't know if they want to hear them from me.
Let's start off with this, the opening match itself. Did you have any notes from Moxley and Dax?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was just, you know, it's really tough for me to watch that wrestling.
Mm-hmm. I don't blame you. I understand.
I mean, it's every match is the same.
Mm-hmm.
They go in there and just hammer each other back and forth and back and forth. And, God, to me, there's, you know, what makes wrestling is a good story.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to tell the story in the ring and get those people emotionally involved. Now, I don't know their brand. I guess it's made for TV. Apparently, the last I heard, the American public's has an 8-second span before they'll turn the channel.
Yeah.
Attention span.
I believe that.
So maybe that's why they do this. But I watched every one of those matches, and there was nothing different. I mean, there was different things happening, but everybody's tough. Nobody sells much. And it just, God, I was trying to think of how I could say some really nice things I mean, the talent, they're busting their asses in there. They'll never, none of those guys will ever talk to me again, will they?
Well, they're not talking to you now, so it doesn't matter.
Right. Shit.
You know, it was, you know, the main event, the Orange Cassidy and Matt
Taven.
Taven.
Mm-hmm.
God, they beat the shit out of each other. Yeah. And I mean, they got busted up. Orange Cassidy got busted. I know it was, he went through a table that the table didn't give. And he was cut up really bad. The other guy got cut up. And then they had tacks and they're slamming each other into the freaking tacks. And I'm going, you know, what is the general public? I mean, are we that? It almost reminded me back of the days of the Roman Empire and throwing them out in the lions, just letting them go.
Yeah.
You know, and the people cheering. I mean, is that what our society has come to? And I mean, when you look around and you see what happened in Kansas City the other day at the
parade
celebration, and people are shot and kids are shot. I mean, what is going on in this world? And then we show them, AEW shows them all this violent stuff. What are our kids? What are they going to think? What are they going to do? Shit. That's it for me about that. TA, they won't ever talk to me again. So give me your thoughts on those.
Well, it's 2024. And this generation that is a big fan of that group has grown up in a video game world of all the craziest crap you can ever imagine in the world. And their product is like an evolution of this whole group in society to me. And they have people depicting things that look very unlikely from history. You know, from, I mean, like, you know, an Orange Cassidy, you know, would not have, you know, would not have gotten even a tip of the hat for somebody to give him an opportunity.
Sure.
Back, you know, back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Through no fault of his own, but just his size.
Yep.
I mean, I remember vividly, you know, I was 6'2", 240, and the guy in Florida that ran the office, his name is totally escaping me at the moment, but, you know, saying I was a little small to go to New York, you know. I mean, you know, in reality, because, you know, Vince, those guys like guys, 6'5", 6'6", 275, 300-pound guys, and I'm 6'2", 240, and I was a little small. But by this standard, when Cody and the Young Bucks and this group came together and created this whole genre, they made a place for all these people that had a passion and had talent to show, you know, what they could do, you know, if given an opportunity, you know, and a stage to do it, you know, when traditionalists would not have even given them a chance. You know, I mean, Rey Mysterio is like, you know, the far exception to the rule, because he's arguably one of the greatest luchadors of all time and what he's capable of doing. But these guys today that again, as passionate as we were, just a different size and a different package, are going out there killing themselves, literally, to Greg's point. And it's not really about the violence part, because we depicted as great or worse violence at our peaks in both of our careers, in our perspective promotions. Yeah. I mean, I used to look at Dusty someday and say, look, we're painting ourselves into a corner. It's not even a matter of someone going to the hospital. If someone doesn't die and just never come back, we're not going to be able to keep this story going. I mean, it's that, you know, it's that dramatic. So today, you know, these guys, you know, I give them credit because I worked solid and I wanted to bring that believability to it. So when they don't look likely, but they're giving it all they got, like a bunch of rabid pit bulls, You know, my, you know, I give them a big check mark from me. Now, to the point of the overall show, there you need to have some variety, because if it's all like that, then it all of a sudden is not quite as effective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes. I mean, because I mean, I was watching the segment that jumped out for me was Edge and Christian.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So we know Edge, you know, neck injury, you know, he was out, he was retired, he came back, you know, and so very graphic, you know, to see him laying there taking a headshot, you know, chair shot like that. And those guys are both, you know, 10 times Hall of Famer pros in my book at what they do.
And
they
know how to do it. The only one of the night.
Right.
Right. And, but that should have been, you know, here, and everything else should have been competitive, this, that, and the other, but different kinds of stories. So again, contrast, you know, lends itself to getting the most mileage out of some of these other things. And it's, you know, I'd rather see it like that than look like, you know, 20 of them standing around twiddling their thumbs, waiting for somebody to cut a backflip off the top rope. So I mean, I'll take the hard-hitting violence over the, you know, the theatrical stuff, you know, all day long. You know, guys like Swerve, listening to, you know, him tell his story, talking to Samoa Joe, you know, real stuff.
Great interview. Great.
Fantastic. He could lose the guy dancing around the flapoon around him. I don't know what he's doing.
Prince Nana.
I know that's their, you know, their little niche or gimmick, whatever, but he's such a money ball player that almost diminishes what if I'd been him in the middle of that interview, I don't want to turn around and biff that guy. You know, like, you know, hey, I'm here. I've done all this stuff that I'm talking about. You know, I've been up and down the road and paid my dues and fought my way in the door when nobody wanted me. And I don't need you playing the fool over here. Just back off for a minute.
Right. And it was serious business there. And
yeah, it was just serious, dead on. And Samoa Joe gives somebody that playing field to have that kind of interaction. So lots of good elements. It's just so much going on. It's like somebody needs to stand back and take a deep breath and say, hey, maybe we're hitting them with a shotgun blast over here, machine guns over here, and all this over here. Maybe we need to like make the storytelling throughout the overall program flow a little different so that, you know, we can get the full emphasis on these really dynamic things that are going on.
Yeah.
I agree with both of you guys too, in the perspective, Greg.
It's almost too much. I mean,
yeah.
That interview, the Hangman and Samoa Joe and Swerve, was a tremendous interview. It was very good. All three of them really were sincere. You could feel the emotion. But you get lost in those matches. I mean, from the first match, those two beat the crap out of each other. Mm-hmm. Hardwood and Mox.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then the Warlord comes in, and you know, it was just a quick match. That's great. But you had Garcia and
Edge there.
That was with Edge in that. Now that one should have been the last one on the matches that night.
I agree.
Instead, they came in with a death match, and Jesus, those guys are just beating the crap out of each other, and they got tacks, and they got everything you can imagine. You're throwing so much at the people that it takes away from the rest. I think the rest of the card, the rest of the matches, you got to build that story up.
It just hit me. Remember what they used to call hot shotting?
Yeah.
Like hot shotting a territory.
Yep.
So Bill Watts used to be really adamant about not wanting to hot shot his territory because he built it on, you know, athletes, competition angles, but really believable deals. And he used to always talk to us about things Memphis did, because Memphis was like the most outlandish, craziest, off the wall stuff that, you know, you ever seen in your life. And when we got Bill Dundee, who came in as a booker at Mid-South, you know, he sprinkled some of that Nashville magic and we popped the territory. It was great. But to that point, you know, you can kill, back in the day, you could kill a territory by doing just that, doing all these hot-shotting, spectacular things that you can't follow. And they're doing that same thing in a single show, something that could have been 6 weeks worth of programming, you know, put in, you know, to something with a little different deal. And again, I'll give it to them. It's 2024, attention span, different, whatnot. But somewhere there's got to be, you know, some rhyme and reason, because the WWF sees that, you know, they can still give you intensity and give you those other pieces, but they know when and where to put it, and not to do something that's going to overshadow what you just did. And where you lose, you watch all those things and you had to write it all down, or you could probably remember to talk about it.
There was even stuff you were bringing up, Greg. I was like, I don't even remember that. And I was like, oh, okay, that did happen.
Why wouldn't you say, you know, like that last match, that death match, why wouldn't you say that for a pay-per-view?
Yeah, well, here's the thing, Greg, is that match is a build to a different match. that's not even the main match. So it's like they're having it with a feud with Roderick Strong, not with Matt Taven. And so you show all that on your main event, and it's not even the main match that it's going to happen on the pay-per-view.
It was over the top for me, but, you know, they're trying to get ratings, and I guess if that's going to...
I don't know if it's been helping. Like, it's just, I think to what you guys are saying too, it's like, it's a matter of pacing, and it's a matter of segmenting it out. So it's not, you're not showing everybody everything. And it's not like just here's a punch in the face. Here's another punch in the face and another punch in the face. And it's just like,
oh God. Yeah.
You get desensitized.
I said, who's going to put a wrestling hold on? Right. Somebody grabbed a headlock for about 15 seconds and that was it. But at least they grabbed one.
At least they got one.
You know, I mean, when we go back, I mean, it was, I mean, you know, you hate to turn back the page, but go back to the AWA. Mm-hmm. You know what we did? Two angles a year. That's it.
That's it.
And it carried us through the whole year.
Yeah.
But we got the month of May and the first 2 weeks of June off, because in the northern tier of the states, summer hits and they don't want to go inside. But two different angles. That's all we did, and it carried us through the whole year.
They're gonna rename our show Two Grumpy Old Men here,
right? You know,
I'll have to redo the graphic where it's like from the
nobody
movie.
In wrestling's gonna want to watch me on here.
Well, before I move on real quick, I did want to get your thoughts, both your guys's thoughts, on the Young Bucks, Darby Allin, all that angle. I mean, the Young Bucks wrestling in suits is always a head scratcher for me. Like, it's just like, you kind of have that aspect where you're building towards Sting, and the money is in Sting's last match coming up. You can do whatever, but I mean, a lot of this stuff that the Bucks talk about being EVPs, this inside baseball talk, where it's just like a lot of about the backstage stuff. And then Darby actually calling out like, hey, this is all friends wrestling basically, and saying that kind of aspect of it all. And then indirectly referencing the biggest babyface on the other product, in Cody Rhodes, like saying like, oh, he was an EVP that I like understood, you guys not. And then Cody Chance happened on AEW Dynamite. So it's like, wow. A lot of schmoz where it's not needed here. And I'm hoping it doesn't affect the send-off that Sting is going to get. Magnum, what are your thoughts real quick on that?
I just think they need a little more supervision. That's all. I mean, you know, passionate, talented folks. I hate scripted interviews, so I'm glad that they do the stylistic things that they do. But even when we were, you know, flying by the seat of our pants and improv on the moment, we always knew boundaries to stay with them. And I think it's difficult today because, you know, they feel like if they're not, you know, out there on the edge of something, that they're not, you know, nobody, they're not moving the needle. And again, this is where, you know, the creative team and, you know, whoever is laying it out there would watch something like that and then talk about it after, not to beat them up, but you know, and maybe they thought it was all great. You know, maybe Tony thought that was all great. But my thought would be, from a coaching perspective is to sit down and watch it and just say, you know, well, what did this leave you with? Did it get us to the next step where we're trying to go, or did we go all over the place? So everybody can bring their game up. You know, it's just a coaching opportunity to make people better at their craft is mm-hmm. all. Because I applaud the fact that they have, you know, all this ability to be creative. But it makes you understand a little bit why somebody with a $1 billion company like the WWE is so controlling of every element that comes out of everybody's mouth, because everything has got a direction. Everything's got a reason. And, you know, you can't have 30 people running around with their own idea of how to interpret things and, you know, no control.
Right. And I agree. Like, I think Darby was compelling in his delivery, but the message was a little off kilter, I think. Greg, let me get your thoughts on that whole thing.
Well, I tell you, first of all, you know, I don't take anything away from the talent. Mm-hmm. I mean, the talent, they have a great talent down there at AEW. They just need some supervision in putting those things together properly and helping the young guys with their interviews. And, you know, you let them out there and, a lot of them were very, very good. And then there were some that were just, you know, and the Young Bucks, you know, with the thing coming up with Sting, they could have put more emphasis on that.
Right.
You know, they just, it like, oh, it's his retirement match. You know, God almighty, the guy's been phenomenal for wrestling, especially down in that area, in, you know, AEW and TBS and all that. They should have really focused on him a little more. The Young Bucks, they were kind of flighty about everything.
Right, yeah, I thought,
you know, and if it's a retirement match and this is serious, then you guys, you know what? We're going to send him out on a stretcher.
Yeah.
We're not going to let him. You think he's going to beat us? There's no way. You know, be sincere about it and tell a story. Don't be so flippant about it. I mean, here's a guy that made TBS, helped make it. And they just kind of fluffed over it.
Yeah.
I mean, Darby, he did the best he could at getting out about Sting, but damn it, it could have been done a lot better.
I think it's in the visual of, like, I think the Young Bucks are great heels. Do not get me wrong. And I think their ability to deliver that stuff. But it's just like the presentation of who they are right now as EVPs and then wearing suits and wrestling and stuff like that. It's just like,
they don't need it.
They don't need it. You don't need it. If you came out dressed in white trunks and like acted like a jerk and all that kind of stuff, that conveys the point of an authoritative point in itself. You're getting that across. But then, boom, you want to really focus on, hey, we're going to end this 64-year-old's career. Right. I don't care how much of a legend he is. He's going to be out of here, and we're going to be the new tag team champions. And like, that's basically all you need, because it's Sting, and it's the last thing.
Focus on that they're going to, hey, you think he's going to go beat us? We're going to send him out? No way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Wait and see what we've got in store for Sting.
Right.
He'll go out, but not with his hand raised.
Not with his hand
raised. He'll be on a stretcher.
And not with those titles around his waist.
Yeah. Either. You know, I mean, God, it was. When I watch that stuff, I just cringe.
I can understand. It's different. It's very different. So.
You guys want to throw me off now?
No, hey. That's what I like about getting your guys' perspective on this. And you know, it's, you know, I think, you know, if you, somebody, a talent in the industry, if they're to take a step back and understand where all this is coming from, it's constructive criticism. There's nothing, I don't think anything wrong with that, especially from two guys like you who know what you're talking about.
So. Well, I hope so, because they really, when you look at the talent, they have a lot of talent there.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
They're just, nobody's directing them.
Yeah.
You know, oh, no, I believe somebody's directing them.
Oh, somebody, I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, somebody is directing. It may not be the way you and I are, you know, used to directing. And I'll say this about kind of that backstage culture.
Mm-hmm.
The people, everybody I've met there is fantastic to be around. So there's no, you know, I didn't see any bad vibes at all when I was backstage. I mean, they're great. I think that there is a mindset of what's good that's not in parallel universe with what, you know, Greg and I think.
Sure.
Even, and I would even say you know, it's taken me a while to wrap my head around things even the WWE does.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Because that's just progress and that's time and that's all this thing. But those guys have really, really got a different perception, different business model thought. And they cringe to think about somebody like, you know, myself or Greg or whatever having any kind of input in anything they're doing whatsoever, because we're dinosaurs. Not that they're not respectful, but they just feel like it's, you know, it's a new culture, it's a new time, it's a new vibe. And obviously the people that are there in that building really enjoy that style that is so gut-wrenching, so intense, whatever. And it almost like I watched Tessa on a hardcore thing that was in California, where they were hitting each other with the light bulbs and all that crazy crap. And every single match of that night was like that. It was like all this just crazy, insane stuff where you had to sweep the ring up between every match so you couldn't even walk because it was glass shards everywhere and just absolute insanity. So I realized there is a whole genre of people that like that. And just because I don't, you know, it's not my deal, I get it. There is a group that thinks that is just the bee's knees and the coolest thing, you know, going. But it's, again, it's finding a balance, trying to get the best out of those huge moments and not just drowning people in it where all of a sudden it's just going to be, you know, if they come off, you know, the ceiling, you know, with a splash and the guy moves, you know, and then the guy gets up and doesn't sell it anyway. What difference does it make?
Right.
You know, so it's a different thing. And it's good that they've got a marketably different product because, frankly, nobody's going to outdo the WWE right now. Mm-mm.
No.
They're just not.
No, they're not.
So you might as well do something completely off the wall because you're not going to outdo what that machine's putting out.
Right, right. And well, yeah,
this was off the wall for me.
Yeah, I could imagine. And, you know, I imagine that Vern never dumped out thumbtacks down at the barn there.
No, we never had the thumbtacks. We had Mad Dog Vachon. We didn't need any thumbtacks.
You didn't need anything else. That was your thumbtacks there was Mad Dog.
Oh, my God. Unbelievable.
Jeez. All right. Well, let's close it out with this. A little bit of a spotlight here. This week, it was revealed was the Remco versions of the Rock and Roll Express. And wow, what kind of figures are these? Are the detail and the look that they have with the entrance attire on, but then with it off too. Super compelling. And everything like that. Greg, you are the tag team expert. What have been your career impressions of the Rock and Roll Express? I know you guys, they never worked in the AWA, but.
Well, they had a tremendous career. I mean, you know, they knew how to get themselves established with the public.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they weren't the biggest guys. I wasn't, you know, you're talking about 240. They're telling you you're too small. I was 211.
Yeah,
you know, and everybody told me I was too small. They told the Rock and Roll they're too small. They're just on fire. I mean, they're great in the ring, and that's what it's all about, is being able to tell that story in the ring and make people believe and be credible. And they were, sensational. You know, I was at an event with them one day, and I was sitting next to Ricky, and I said, and people were standing, and I said, you know, this is the match everybody wanted. Think we can do it?
Buy it up.
He said, I couldn't. I said, yeah, well, I don't think I could.
Well, I mean, Vern saw the money in them too, because like you had the Midnight Rockers there.
We had the Midnight Rockers. That was Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty when they first started. And they were a pair.
I could imagine.
Oh, you can't even imagine the stuff that they did. You know, they were young and wild, and in the ring, they were phenomenal, you know, but you had to keep them. You had to keep a thumb on them constantly. They were hard to handle. I wasn't around the Rock and Roll Express much, but I don't think they were hard to handle. They did business and they knew how to do it and they did it right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're a great team. And I'll tell you that Remco action figures of those two, they should sell like crazy.
I tell you what.
Yeah.
Super cool looking, super cool, super throwback, obviously. Magnum, give me your thoughts on the Rockers being, you know, the NWA guy and all that aspect. And Ricky was such an amazing seller and such good baby faces, you know, that I really cultivate.
Well, and Ricky knew his role. Ricky knew how to make everybody in that arena want to come in that ring and help him. I mean, he could sell and get the sympathy and stay in the fight and make, and, you know, and come back, have fire. He could talk. He had the entire package. I mean, I watched him and Robert when they first came to Mid-South, when I was there, and of course the huge splash they made when they came to the NWA. There wasn't anything they couldn't do. And Ricky was so good that seriously, as great of a tag team career as they had, I'm not so sure that Ricky couldn't have been one of the biggest singles of all time, because he was a, you know, a Rey Mysterio-ish type individual. And if he had been given the push, and which I just don't think he would have ever done it to Robert because they were so tight and so close. But as a single, I'm not so sure he couldn't have been one of the biggest of all time.
Yeah. So you think he would have been capable of being world champion and anything like that? You think he had all the
hands down? Hands down. Him and Flair did the whole 60 minutes all the way around the whole country. Then they came back and did 90 minutes around the entire country. And you know, Ricky was, you know, 190 pounds and never got tired and could just go and go and go. And his work in the ring was phenomenal. And again, and he had a very passionate, great interview to go along with it. So he was the package before that was fashionable. You know, he was doing something that was outside the box, because again, that was back when everybody wanted, you know, 6'2", 240 to 250 pound guy, you know, in that marquee role as they NWA foresaw it back in that day. And because he was a baby face, you know, what wouldn't initially been thought of, but I think Ricky Morton could have just been a megastar as a single. And to his credit, Robert doesn't ever get all the credit he should get. But Robert is fundamentally sound in the ring as anybody you'd ever want to see. His timing was impeccable. He just didn't have the microphone persona that his partner did. And, you know, he would say a very few words and Ricky would always carry the interview. And unfortunately, you know, that cat typecast you a little bit. But if you watch what he did in the ring, he was phenomenal. And, you know, so he's really second to none. And it's not like he was the sidekick. He could hold his own completely in the ring. It was surely Ricky's charisma on the microphone to go along with that, you know, that baby face selling and comebacks that, you know, made him kind of a standout.
Well, it's crazy too, because they're still going at it. Actually Robert Gibson retired briefly, but coming up WrestleMania weekend, they're working GCW. It's the Rock and Roll Express and Ricky's son Kerry going up against the East West Express and Mike Bailey. And the funny aspect about this, guys, is Ricky Morton, I believe, is 67, and his opponent, Nick Wayne, who's also from AEW, is 18 years old. So it's quite the age range there that you have going on in that bout. But yeah, they're still going, and it's pretty cool to kind of see. And
that should be great.
Really shows the influence and the historical impact that those guys have had on the business, and that's across the board in a lot of ways. So, Magnum, do you want to give us a little bit of details of how people can get excited and get ready for these Remco figures to release?
Man, they're excited. I'm excited. The soft goods, the accessories that go with these things have all been completed. You see in the Rock and Roll Express in their full blown, you know, outfits with the bandanas and everything now. But I've been privy to seeing all the soft goods for all the figures in the line, along with the belts. And the belts are going to be blow people away. This whole Remco thing, it is new for me because I was more attuned to what we were doing with the Ultra figures. But now I see why this was such a thing back in the 80s. And, you know, we've evolved, you know, what that presentation looks like, and the head sculpts are way more, you know, like the characters than what they were back in the day. They were very rough and kind of primitive by comparison in the 80s. And we've given the figures a little more articulation, but way better head sculpts, and the accessories are going to be top notch. So, yeah, I'm very excited when they reveal Tully in his robe. Everybody's going to pop.
Oh, man.
When will those hit the market now?
When do they ship to market?
Yep.
Or when we go on sale. Let's go on sale before we ship.
Yep.
when is there a pre-sale start or anything like that? Can people?
We're forecasting that it will be in March.
Okay.
We're anticipating somewhere in the first week or so of March, if everything all comes together. We are part of a company that prides themselves not only on the manufacturer and the design of what we're doing, but the overall presentation. If you've seen any of the videos that Steve and Joe Kubik have collaborated on and put together, we're doing things very a la, you know, the old television days.
Yeah.
And videos and whatnot. So you get the whole experience with Powertown. It's the figures, but it's also the build up to the storytelling that goes along with. It's kind of a whole culture and experience that we're trying to bring to this market. And it's really a fun thing to be a part of.
Absolutely. And guys, if you like what you're seeing, go to powertownwrestling.com and you can check out some of those Ultra figures that they have already out that are very, very high quality and very, very cool looking. So check those out. And yeah, just some exciting stuff down the pipeline. Obviously working with TNA that we talked about last week, and now these Remco figures, and then Series 2 forthcoming. You mentioned like 2024 is going to be such a big year for the wrestling figures when it comes to Powertown. So it's pretty cool to be on the forefront with you guys on this. And it's been a very, very fun episode. And we broke down a lot. Greg, I expect you to bring a bag of thumbtacks next week and we can have a party.
I'll have thumbtacks and kendo sticks and chairs.
All that malarkey.
Glass knucks, I'll bring them all.
Bring them all. Hardcore Greg Gagne. I like it.
I'll bring back Go-Go Laura here. No, she got the dog out. The dog wanted to go out, and I had to get her down here to get the dog out.
What a valet.
Yeah, she's phenomenal.
All right, so guys, if you like what you're seeing, go to GagneandMagnum.com. That's our YouTube channel. Hit subscribe, like, comment on the videos. Give us some feedback. Tell us what you like to see, what you want to see more of, anything like that. I'm always up for constructive criticism, whatever it may be. You can follow Mr. Gagne up there at Gagne.Greg on Instagram. You can follow Magnum TA on X at The Real Magnum TA. And you can follow him also on Instagram at Magnum_TA. And you can follow me on Twitter at Dominic D'Angelo. But guys, episode 7 in the books.
And everybody go to that Powertown site.
Yes.
That is some really great stuff.
That is the QR code that you see to my right. And just scan that. You'll go right to that website, check out the figures, and get excited because it's such a cool, cool business. And
we got more than the figures coming, don't we, TA?
Ooh.
I'm not going to tell.
Okay.
You're not going to tell?
We got a little cliffhanger.
I thought I could catch him off guard and he'd spill something, but you can't.
You got to tune in next week. Maybe you'll just have to tune in down the line, guys. But hey, we'll see you next week here on Straight Talk with the Boss, Magnum TA and Greg Gagne.